Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Live Well Bipolar. I am so excited. I have an amazing guest who I feel like I know already so well. We constantly talk back and forth. She's been a huge support to me recently with a lot of the events that I've gone through, and I know that I am so excited to bring her full story to you guys. We've been talking. It feels like we've known each other for years, and it has not been that way. But to tell you a little bit about who we have today, I am speaking with Katie. She is the woman behind the Instagram page, Katie.TheBipolarTherapist, which I will have linked in the show notes. She received her bachelor's honors degree in psychology in 2007, and following being diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1 with psychosis, completed her master's of social work in 2010. She graduated with distinction and proceeded to work in the mental health field within a healthcare environment since that time. Katie has experienced working in programs such as eating disorder treatments, intimate partner violence, crisis and suicide intervention, and within an acute mental health unit in a hospital setting. In addition to providing individual and group-based therapy, Katie has recently started to speak publicly about her lived experience with bipolar disorder, generalized anxiety, and OCD. She is dismantling the stigma around mental illness, providing education, advocacy, and telling her story about managing her mental illness while living a fulfilling life. I can't wait to dive deeper into your story. I know we have a lot of things to talk about and cover, but I'm just excited to see you and to actually meet you in person when you come out here.
I know, I'm excited.
I know, we were talking and she's coming out because I know you guys know I'm in Arizona, so that'll be happening sometime this year. But what's really interesting about your story in particular is you talk about your diagnosis and getting your education, having that background and working in the field of mental health and behavioral sciences as well. So I'd love to hear just your interpretation of what that moment was like for you upon getting your bipolar diagnosis. And did that in any way affect the work that you're doing?
So in 2008, the doctor didn't tell me I had bipolar disorder. He told me that I had a manic episode with psychosis. So I didn't understand that I had bipolar disorder, but I had just completed my psychology degree and I knew some things about bipolar disorder, but they definitely didn't like dive into any sort of illness specifically in depth. It was more generalized. These are some illnesses that are severe. Here they are. So I actually didn't know I had bipolar disorder. I thought I had some sort of episode induced by stress. I had a lot of stress in my life at that time. And then I was on medication and I was in treatment. And then 2 years after that, the doctor said, okay, go off your medication. You're okay. And so I thought that I just had some sort of stress-induced episode. And then 10 years later, exactly to the date, I had a full-blown mixed episode. And at that time, the doctor said, well, you're having a mixed episode with psychotic features, and that's part of your bipolar disorder. And she was looking at the hospital notes. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean I have bipolar disorder? So I was never told that I had bipolar disorder, but I was technically diagnosed in 2008. So once I was off medication, I was kind of in an uphill, downhill. My emotions weren't regulated. I was missing work for weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. And then I was hyper for weeks at a time and not sleeping. Like I was all over the place, but thinking that something was wrong with me. I knew it wasn't normal, but I didn't know what was wrong with me.
Oh my gosh, just hearing you describe that. And especially when you talk about 2008 and being told manic episode with psychosis and saying, well, I just finished my degree. And then later, you know, having that doctor say, well, this is part of your bipolar disorder. So never being explicitly told that this is what is going on. So since you weren't told that all along, did you feel like that was what it was? Because I feel like for me, when I got the diagnosis of hearing, here's bipolar disorder, here's some information on it, I feel like I was both afraid and relieved to say, okay, well, this is at least what is going on. Did that cause any kind of confusion for you in not actually getting that initially?
So when I didn't get that initially, like the internet wasn't what it is today. So there wasn't information readily available to you. So I really couldn't dive into what is a manic episode. And if I could today, it would be totally different. Then I could have Googled manic episode and I would have known that that's part of bipolar disorder type one. But at that time, we were just doing what the doctor said. So I feel like if I got a proper diagnosis, though, if he told me flat out, like, you have bipolar disorder type one, then when the internet did get better, I would have researched it more. I would have worked on understanding my triggers, my warning signs, things like that, which technically I didn't start doing until 2010. I knew I was riding a roller coaster from, like, between that time when I went off medication and then restarted medication. But my episode was severe when I was told I have bipolar disorder, and that could have been avoided if I was told in the first place that you have bipolar disorder and treated correctly.
Right. And I feel like another thing that surprised me too, when you talked about this, is I know that also in 2010, that's when you completed your master's, correct? That's the same year as well.
Sorry, 2018. I'm sorry. 2018. I was told I had the diagnosis. So it was 10 years.
Oh, 10 right years after. Later. Mm.
10 years later. So I was actually working in a psychiatric setting at the time, and I had a full, like, I hadn't been sleeping. I had a lot of symptoms, mixed symptoms, and it just led to me having a breakdown. I was just crying my eyes out. I wanted to end my life. So, but then I wasn't sleeping. I was hyper. There was so many things going on. So then that's when I was told, like, you're having a mixed episode. And I saw a psychiatrist immediately because at that time I was working in a psychiatric setting.
Oh, wow.
So they, like, kind of pulled me aside, had me meet with a psychiatrist, and then things rolled from there.
And then to understand this too, you said, so 2008 was the diagnosis, and 2010 is when you said the doctor was like, oh, we can go off your medication. So I feel like that's something that's interesting, because I haven't heard too many people. I've heard many people share with me that they decided to go off their medication, but I haven't heard as many people say that they were with a doctor. Did they explain, oh, here's why we're doing this? Or was it kind of just like, oh?
No, he just said, like, that I had been stable and that I can wean off my medication. It had been 2 years, and he essentially told me that I was stabilized and that I can wean off my medication now and to do yoga. Side note,
oh my gosh,
he does not have his doctor license anymore.
Wow.
So I don't think he was the most reliable doctor to be with, but that's who I was paired with when I went into the emergency department. When I was having my manic episode, he was the person that was there. So it was kind of a situation where if I would have got a different psychiatrist assessing me that day, it could have been totally different. The psychiatrist might have been more informative of what I was going through. So it was just kind of luck of the draw.
Oh my gosh. And just to hear you say this doctor no longer has a license and was saying, hey, let's, you know, slowly go off your medication and do yoga. I've definitely seen that for sure. I've had people tell me that. I've actually had other doctors tell me that too. Like, oh, you should go off this, or you don't need to be on this. And same thing, like, you've been stable for a certain period of time. And I know in my case, when I was off medication for, it was 3 months, I started crying out of nowhere. I had things coming back up. So I'd love to hear for you, right? So you talk about 2010 to 2018 is when you were finally told this is bipolar in 2018. What was that period like for those 8 years? So between 2010 to 2018, how were you feeling? Were you completely off medication that entire time?
I was off medication that entire time. I was not stable. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely riding the roller coaster that is bipolar disorder, and I was unmedicated. But I thought that I didn't know I had bipolar disorder. So I knew something was wrong with me. And I knew that I was having symptoms of something. But at that time, I was more focused on, I had just gotten a job. I was recruiting and hiring for that position, for other positions. So I was really focused on that. And I couldn't understand why sometimes I wanted to end my life. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I was not sleeping. And then sometimes I was crying for no reason and listening to sad music and not, and sleeping a lot. And when I got home from work, I'd go to bed, and then I just don't want to go to work in the morning, but I dragged myself there. Like, so I was definitely having ups and downs, mm-hmm. and I definitely had episodes, but I didn't know I was having episodes. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge wasn't there. So I couldn't really do the research to understand my illness better.
Wow. That makes so much sense. Just hearing you break down the symptoms that were coming up for you and the things that you were experiencing during that 8-year period. That reminds me so much of what I went through when I also did not know that I had bipolar disorder, because I was originally diagnosed with depression and I was treated for that. And I remember even having, you know, my doctors, my therapist say, well, you don't need to come in anymore. Pretty kind of similar to you. And then also going off the medication and stuff that I was on at the time. But I think the most powerful thing I take away from that is through that 8-year period, not knowing that this whole time what I was dealing with was bipolar disorder, because what, like anyone would think, you're just following the advice of the doctors, the people around you, and trying to do the best that you can in your job, being excited about this new career. And then also, like you said, facing those conflicting feelings of not wanting to get up, sleeping too much, having to drag myself out of bed, having those crying spells and the thoughts of suicide, wanting to end your life, all of these mixed emotions, feelings all over the place. So during that period of time from 2010 to 2018, before you were told in 2018 that this is bipolar disorder, because I know for me, looking back on my life, I definitely did have supports, but I was just so wound up in what I was dealing with that it was hard for me to really see that for most of the time. So I'd love to hear from you. Do you feel during that time period that you had supportive people in your life? And if so, who were those people and what did that support look like?
So I had a lot of instability in relationships. So I didn't have a partner or anything that was supportive in any way. So I lacked that, but I would always call my mom. And I, at that time I lived for 5 years, I lived about 3 hours away from home. So I would call her and I'd say, I don't know what's wrong. I haven't been sleeping. I feel, and she'd say, Katie, why are you talking so fast? Why are you talking so loud? Just, you need to take some deep breaths. So my mom was always very supportive, but again, we didn't know that what we were dealing with. She just thought I was really stressed from work or I was homesick. So there was all these, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. We noticed things happening, but you're going to be okay. You're fine. Like, you already got through that mental health. Like, we called it a mental breakdown, mm-hmm. is what we called it. So it was like, you recovered from that. Try to pull yourself together kind of thing now. Like, you have a career, you need to stay focused. Like, it was more trying to make me do well in my career. Right. So it was just kind of like, okay, you need to get some sleep. So what can you do to get some sleep? And because you need to go to work in the morning. Oh, you called in sick. That's terrible. Don't call in sick. They're going to think that you're not reliable. Like, things like that. It was more focused on me pulling myself together. But at the same time, I was in the absence of medication. I was in the absence of therapy. I didn't have any kind of supports that were medical to assist me or therapeutic to assist me in knowing and directing me of what's going on.
Wow. That reminds me so much of exactly how I felt prior to my diagnosis. And then right after even receiving it for that time, especially when you mentioned instability in relationships, I can resonate so much with that. And I know a lot of that was so much tied in with my struggle, because I know I was going out and I was constantly trying to run away from it. Like you said, dealing with pulling yourself up to present a certain way at work or around public, that was my whole focus. And I feel like eventually it just burned me out and I crashed. And my breakdown was in 2014 when I was hospitalized and I was finally given the diagnosis of bipolar. So I'd love to ask you, was that breakdown moment for you 2018, or when you were finally told this is bipolar disorder, did something change, or what happened in that moment?
So I was scared because I knew what bipolar disorder was by that time. And I knew it was a severe mental illness. And I knew the statistics around it. And I knew how sick people could be with it. So in my mind, I was thinking, well, how am I supposed to maintain employment? How am I supposed to be in a stable, well, I was in a relationship when I was diagnosed in 2018, and I'm married to him now. Mm-hmm. So I had him there too, but we also were long distance at that time. So he could hear me going through the struggle, but he wasn't with me through the struggle. But as soon as I was diagnosed, then I knew what I had and I did the research, and the internet was readily available for information. So I went on everything to just learn about it. I bought books, I studied it, because I wanted to be as familiar with it as possible. And that's the key really to managing my illness, is that I am so knowledgeable about the way my illness manifests. Mm. So I can watch for warning signs. I'm very good at that now. I know what triggers happen that lead to episodes. So I can really avoid episodes as much as possible.
Wow. I feel like everything I took away from that was the education piece. So like you said, delving into this world of doing the research, seeing others with lived experience, listening to podcasts, books. When I really started to notice a difference in being able to move so much out of this struggle and being so consumed with it all, that's really what helped me a lot. So I'd love to walk through that relationship. You talk about first being long distance, and now you talk about being married today. Something we talked about a little bit before was managing high stress situations, like your wedding coming up. And I know that was something I went through last year. So obviously, oh, it's so exciting. It's the best day of your life and all these things. Yes, it is. But also, right, we do know, like you said, doing the research on warning signs and triggers, anything can be a trigger, right? It can be positive and negative. And I feel like sometimes we just think, oh, if you lost your job or you got broken up with, then that could cause an episode. But no, I mean, getting a promotion, like you said, going on a really nice trip, or all these kinds of things can cause that. So I'd love to hear about your evolution of your guys' relationship, how you met, and really just break that down on what that's looked like from a supportive front.
So I was basically done with relationships because of the instability I had in relationships. And then a mutual friend of both of us, he happened to be one of my closest friends, and he was one of Ryan's closest friends. He introduced us. So I think that because of that, I already knew he's not going to introduce me to somebody who is terrible. He wouldn't do that. So I knew that this would be a good match. And as soon as we met, we hit it off.
And this was in 2018 or what?
No, we met in 2017, I think, or 2016 maybe. But yeah, so I think it was 2016. And so then I received my diagnosis in 2018, and he researched it as well. So he could be familiar with what it is. He has no mental health background. He's in sales. So he took the time then to research it and find out everything he could about it so that he could help me. And he can spot my warning signs too. So he's very good with knowing. He'll say to me, you know what, you're talking really fast, or you're talking a lot. And I feel like you won't stop talking. Are you concerned about that? Like, he'll say it in a supportive way. And then I'll think about it and say, oh my gosh, you know what? I haven't been sleeping. And I feel like he is such a narc about sleeping. If he sees me if he gets up to go to the washroom at 4 o'clock in the morning and he sees me awake, he is, well, how many hours did you sleep last night? How many hours did you get? Are you okay? What time did you fall asleep? What time did you wake up? Were you awake the whole time? So sleep is like a big warning sign for me. And I think it is for many people with bipolar disorder. But as soon as if I start losing sleep, it's almost always a predictor that I'm headed towards a manic episode. And I typically experience mixed episodes. Mm-hmm. I've only had two true manic episodes, and then I have had a few mixed episodes and one depressive episode. So he can really spot the warning signs for me, and he can give me feedback because sometimes I don't realize what's going on because I don't see it at that time until it's pointed out.
Right. Hearing you share that reminds me a lot of just in terms of my relationship too, having someone who can call it out in a supportive way, because even though we do all the work to learn, have the education around it, to learn about what are our warning signs, what are our triggers look like, you know, sometimes it does help to have those people around us who can see it before we do, or because I know we can kind of catch ourselves. So that's makes a huge difference. And I could definitely hear you walking through the evolution of the relationship, how you guys first met and everything like that. But I would love to hear what it was like for you with managing the stress that came with the wedding. What did that look like?
So we got married in 2021, November of 2021, in the midst of COVID. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of stress around wedding planning because in the city I live in, so one, I was a frontline worker. Mm-hmm. So two, the city I live in kept changing the rules around weddings. So first it was you could have 50 people and they all have to wear masks. Then it was you could have 100 people, they all have to wear masks. And then it went back down to 50. So we actually... they went up to 150 people and then we invited 150 people and then they went down to 100. Mm. So then we were praying for people to RSVP no, because we didn't want to call them and say, by the way, you didn't make the cut. Sorry, dismiss your invitation. Right. So there was so much stress around planning the wedding. There's a lot involved with planning a wedding, even on its own, and then tie in COVID. So I started to go into a manic episode. So I was not sleeping. I was stressing over my Excel sheets for the wedding, the invitations. I started to amp up. I was not sleeping. So before my wedding, to avoid hospitalization, I was put on stronger medication to help relieve some of the symptoms. But going into my wedding, I was definitely manic, but then I was put on medication immediately to bring me down to a stable level. But unfortunately, that medication made me very numb. Mm. So I feel like I didn't get the full experience of the wedding day because I was medicated at the time, mm-hmm. To the point of feeling numb in a way. So that's unfortunate, but that was an exciting time for me. And here I am going into an episode when this is supposed to be the happiest day of my life.
Oh my gosh. I hear you 100%. I know a lot of friends who got married during COVID and they shared the same things of how frustrating and the venues canceling, people, like all these things that are going on that it's just out of your control. And then really what that does to how you're feeling with your sleep, the thoughts that are racing, the worries of having to tell people, oh, you can't come now because of this. And it's just so frustrating to be in that, but then say, this is supposed to be the most exciting time, happiest moment of my life. And I'm doing everything I can to take care of myself, to prevent hospitalization, the best of my ability. I have Ryan, I have that support, but it's important too, to acknowledge that and give yourself grace in those moments. Cause I know that's like something that I'm always trying to do more of for sure. I'm always trying to do that. But something we mentioned at the beginning of the episode was you recently started to open up publicly about living with bipolar disorder. And I'd love to hear your timeline on that. If there was a certain moment that came in for you where you're like, this is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm going to do it. So I'd love to hear that breakdown.
So I was on bed rest from having back surgery. So that was just last year. I started to look up on Instagram, on my personal Instagram, people with bipolar disorder. And actually I came across yours. So I just started listening to podcasts and just really focused on self-growth because I was going through this difficult time physically. So I thought, you know, I need to guard myself against depression because I kind of felt like it was this vulture kind of flying over me and waiting for me to falter in my mental health so it could capture me. So I decided to just really focus on self-growth. And then when I listened to all these people being open about their bipolar illness and being like having no shame, because I had so much shame about it. I still struggle with that, because I struggle with, am I going to be judged, which I will be. Mm-hmm. And I've accepted that. Am I going to be viewed as less credible or my intelligence questioned, things like that. So I basically decided that I was going to make that into my Instagram page, and I made it because I was finding information that was inaccurate. Mm-hmm. So I knew a lot about bipolar disorder, and I would come across pages that I was like, well, that's not accurate. So I made the page because I just wanted to put accurate information out there. Mm-hmm. And then through that, I met people. And then when I started meeting people and developing relationships with people with bipolar disorder, it started to empower me. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to just post on both Facebook, which is all just family members for me, and then on my personal Instagram, which involves coworkers, friends, extended friends, acquaintances. I decided to post one on each. And it basically said, I had a manic episode in 2008. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1. I've been living with this illness since that time. And that was it. It was a very short, to the point post. And then I had a panic attack. Right. And ran away from my phone. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just do? But I only received support. And I'm sure there were people who snickered about it or whatever, but I just wanted to rip the Band-Aid off is what I did. And I just had held it as a secret because I was ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. I viewed it as some sort of, you know, disability that I had, that I didn't want people to know about. So when I finally opened up about it and then I received support, that was a huge moment for me and completely life-changing. So that's what made me want to be more of an advocate and start to speak publicly about it to help other people.
Oh my gosh. And I'm so glad that, I know we had this conversation offline, but talking about the shame and how you had so much of that and coming across other people, and that's how we met, right? How we got connected and, you know, we're able to have these conversations. But I remember feeling the exact same way. And especially as someone who used to work in the mental health field, I worked at the same hospital where I was a patient at. So I feel like it continued to perpetuate the stigma even more, where I wanted to open up at my job and say, look, I live with bipolar disorder. I take the same medication as you. I was hospitalized, all these things. I wanted to say that, but I remember, for me at least, in the places that I worked in, it would almost be worse, where I'd see people who are working there making fun of other people. And it just made me really want to share it, but I just felt so powerless to it. So I'd love to ask you, what was that moment like for you when you're just like, I'm going to do this. I know the purpose that I have in sharing this. And especially what I think is so powerful is your experience working in the field every single day and the places that you've worked in and the people that you've been able to serve. And I know, talking about the panic attack, that's something that I can relate a lot to with sharing this information, getting into these topics. And you talk about receiving the support and maybe being surprised by that, because I know for me, when I opened up, I was like, okay, this is the end. Everyone's going to have nothing but bad things to say, but it really wasn't that way. So I'd love to hear if you've gotten any feedback, maybe from people that you work with or things like that, that you really didn't expect.
So I did get some private messages saying, actually some people had disclosed to me that they also had it, which was surprising to me and then also comforting to me, because then it normalized my illness a lot more. And it took away a lot of the shame part of it, because I was thinking, okay, so you're a nurse and you work in a healthcare setting and you also have bipolar disorder. So you're not going to judge me for having it. But all the messages I received were supportive. But of course, my mind focused on the messages I didn't receive as well. But that was, you know, that's something that I knew going into it. I had to do it and let go of what the outcome would be. And I knew that going into it. So I said, I'm going to do this and I'm letting go. And whatever the outcome is, right. But I have to do this for myself. So yeah. So I mean, I did have some spiraling about, well, this person never acknowledged it, but I find that I did it. So all my family, everybody knows, but nobody talks about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they know though.
Right. And I think that that's also the weight that's been lifted off your chest, because I feel like that's how I felt. Like it was just keeping this secret that I really wanted to share, but then I felt like exactly what you said, the messages that you didn't receive. So I feel like that was the same way I felt. I was like, oh, wow, I didn't expect support from all these people. But then I was always thinking about in the back of my mind, I know this person has seen it, but they haven't said anything. And then it was like those thought spirals of like, what do they think? Do they think less of me? Do they not want to be my friend, or whatever the scenarios that we can often go down? I know we have these conversations all the time, but I love seeing when you talk about opening up about it and getting those messages from other people in your space, other nurses and professionals in the field of mental health saying, look, I also live with bipolar disorder. And I feel like that to me is incredible, because I feel like if you would have never done that, if you would have never opened up, we would have never connected. I would not be able to call you a friend and someone that, you know, has been such a support to me, and receiving the messages from you that have been so helpful and just our constant back and forth. I always think about it, right? Just the power of our story and how oftentimes we can really downplay that and tell ourselves, keep quiet, don't talk about it, keep doing what you're doing. We keep doing that. Like, oh, you have the successful career, you have your marriage, you have all these things that maybe we would have told ourselves we would not have been able to have because of bipolar. But then there's always that voice that's like, well, if you say it, this could happen, or you'll be judged or criticized. And I love your outlook on it of, I release control. And I said, whatever the outcome is, whatever the responses are, I know in my heart that I'm doing it to put out the information that is helpful and is my real experience. And I am so thankful for you. I am so, you know, blessed to know you and to have the opportunity to share your story. And the last question I always love to ask every single person is, when you think about the name of this podcast, Live Well Bipolar, what does it look like for you today when you think about what that name means for you?
I think that it means knowledge. Mm. Researching your illness and researching and figuring out how it manifests in you, because it's different for everyone. Yes, we might have the same diagnosis, but it can be completely different the way it manifests in me compared to you or somebody else. So you really need to be an investigator and know your triggers, know your warning signs, know what situations are going to maybe lead to an episode. So I think knowledge is the most important part of managing your illness and living well.
I love that. And especially when you talk about how it manifests for you differently than how it does for me, and being that investigator, playing that role of doing all you can to recognize what that looks like for you, but then also to the same point, continuing to educate yourself and really never being done with that work. And I have enjoyed talking to you so much, and I cannot wait for more conversations and to, you know, be able to meet you when you come out here. Like, I know we've been going back and forth talking about this, but Katie, I just want to thank you so much for making the time to come out, break down your story, the timeline, the experiences, what has been helpful for you, what those obstacles look like, and really what you do today to continue to navigate that and really show up for yourselves in the moments that still hit us where we oftentimes don't expect it all the time. So thank you so much for being here, for sharing your story, and just being the amazing, incredible person you are, and just adding so much value to my life and the lives of so many here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you letting me come on your podcast. I'm so grateful. that I get to do this and share my story. So thank you so much.
Of course. And you guys too, thank you so much for being here, for tuning in and doing the work, whether it's the work for yourself or the work for someone you love or care for. You're making a difference by being here and tuning into these conversations. And I hope you took as much value away from Katie's story as I have by being able to feature it for you. So on that note, I want to end it and say goodbye to you guys and bye, Katie. So bye. Bye, Katie.
Bye.